Wendy? Yes, Lisa. Is the water warm enough? Yes, Lisa. Shall we begin?
Hey, it's Pamela from Pine Hill. You're listening to WGXC Acra, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
Wave Farms Public Art Park begins opening Saturdays on June 3rd for drop-in visits anytime between noon and 6 p.m. The art park is on Wave Farms' 29-acre campus in Acra, featuring 13 installations. The study center, including a research library, the WGXC 90.7 FM Acra broadcast studio, and accommodations for Wave Farms' International Artist Residency Program. Visitors to Wave Farms Art Park receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free, and tours typically last between 60 and 90 minutes. The art park is available to see on other days through October through reservations at wavefarm.org.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you'll do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Friday Night Racer of Hartsdale, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm trying to get the people to say frequency.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. This program is Bequency, and my name is Mayoko. Bequency invites the local community to be inspired by the joy, beauty, and wisdom bird enthusiasts find in the nature of our neighborhoods. Every episode features an interview with local bird people, plus a free-form mix of sounds made by birds and humans inspired by birds. We heard some birdie music by Natalia Bayliss, an artist based in Ireland. The tracks were titled Good Birds, Good Night, and the second track was A Visit to Yasmin. They're both from Natalia's brand new album titled Mermaids. They were recorded with the chickens and ducks of Barrymore, Athlone, it says here. Good birds, good night. Well, it's not so much of a good night time here in the Hudson Valley. It's more of a good morning, and I hope you're having a good morning. I'm looking outside the window of this radio station, the studio in Accra here at Wave Farm. It's a little bit like foggy. Well, fogs covering the top of the mountain, which is quite beautiful. And it's a little bit gray and a little bit chilly morning, but there's always some beauty to find in any weather in any season. So I hope you're enjoying this morning out there. If it's morning out there, you might be in the evening place. But anyhow, so that's what we're doing right now, and I hope you're staying cozy. For today's Bequency, I interview Eric Kiviat, a lifelong resident of Hudson Valley who has studied the plants and animals of the region for 45 years. Eric is the executive director and co-founder of Hudsonia, which is a not-for-profit institute founded in 1981 for research, education, and technical assistance in the environmental sciences. And Eric shares how the information that has been collected by Hudsonia can help us make decisions or ask the right questions that help our community thrive while protecting the bird habitats and natural environment. So I hope you stick around and enjoy this conversation with Eric. Thanks for tuning in. This is Bequency.
Could you introduce yourself?
I'm Eric Kiviat. I'm the executive director of Hudsonia. We're a small nonprofit organization sharing space here in Annandale, New York, in the Bard College Field Station.
This field station is very beautiful.
Thank you.
The surroundings and this whole building looks like a kid's dream.
Yeah, it needs some sprucing up, but we're doing it little by little.
Like a secret fort, or maybe not a fort, but like a secret place for it.
That's a nice analogy. I like that.
And so Hudsonia does a lot of things, so it might be hard to briefly explain it, but could you tell us what it is?
Of course. We call ourselves a research and education institute in the environmental sciences. So we do scientific research on plants and animals and their habitats and other phenomena related to those. And then we take the information from our studies and from other people's research and compile and create information that that we use and others use to educate environmental professionals. So these are folks who either serve on municipal agencies like planning boards and conservation advisory councils, or they work for land trusts or environmental groups or other entities that are involved with conservation and land use planning.
Mm-hmm. But also the information Hudsonia collects and research and archive, those are not just for professionals, mm-hmm. but something that the community members can
utilize absolutely.
As well.
So we produce news from Hudsonia twice a year, which incorporate some of the results of our studies, and we interact with people and we give presentations and we get questions over the phone or by email. Yesterday, a local person sent me a photograph of a snake that she had found dead, and she wanted to know what species it was, and we've had a little exchange of emails about milk snakes and where they are and what they eat. And
milk snakes?
Milk snakes, yeah. Yeah, they're called, it's a funny name, they're called milk snakes because there's a folk tale, let's call it, that, you know, the farmers saw milk snakes in cow barns because milk snakes eat mice. And they thought the snakes were milking the cows. So someone decided to call them milk snakes.
Okay. So people just contact you to
Sometimes,
send you photos?
Yeah.
Ask you
questions? Well, through our website or through the college sometimes, mm-hmm. yeah.
I see. So there were habitat maps and reports and also natural resource inventories. Those are another source of information that communities can use. Like, how could you maybe tell us how you intend those information to be used?
Yes. Well, I'll tell you how those reports and maps actually are being used.
Hmm.
There are land trusts like the Columbia Land Conservancy, Dutchess Land Conservancy, Green Land Trust, I believe it's called, that refer to our maps and analyses when they're considering accepting a conservation easement or acquiring a piece of property for a nature preserve. So that's one very good use of our reports and maps. Municipal agencies use them when they're reviewing development proposals, land use proposals. That's also a very common use. And some of the maps and reports are used by private property owners in deciding how to manage their own land.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lots of different, you know, they're also used educationally. So in Dutchess County, college faculty member has taken all of our maps for about two-thirds of Dutchess County and joined them together and made an interactive website so that students and, you know, and landowners and other people can refer to this very abundant ecological information about the county.
I think I came across one of the reports you made, the Hudsonia made, through the news in, I think, 2022, that Ancrum had one landowner there was going to, well, they proposed the development plan of a resort.
Mm.
The town was against, well, some members of the town were against this idea, saying that one of the concerns that they raised were how would it affect the water resource, a lot of people using wells, and also the habitats of wildlife there, that there are a lot of meadowlarks and bobolinks, and those ground nesting birds are often in Ancrum. And so those specific information were all put together, and I think the group from the town presented all this information. And so I kind of became more curious since I moved upstate, like, how do people like me, who's not, don't have a background in natural science or anything, can have the understanding, some information, so we can collectively decide what our community wants to do or what our town wants to do. How do I want to vote? I mean, I actually cannot vote because I'm not a citizen yet, but at least I can voice my opinion. And to have an opinion, you need information. And so,
well, we want you and other members of the community to have better information, because often in land use decisions and controversies, one side, often the side that is going to make money from a development project or a mining project or warehouses or something, has the ability to hire consultants and lawyers and, you know, engineers and so on, whereas the planning board and the citizens may not have that ability. So one of the functions of Hudsonia is not to take sides, but to go into a situation and study what's there and analyze the project that's proposed and the kinds of impacts that it may have on a particular location, and to give everyone that information. You know, it's not just this side or that side. The information's out there for everyone.
Right.
And we think that leads to better decisions for the long-term future. And even if you or a planning board member, for example, can't have the knowledge to, you know, to analyze the biology of a situation, we hope at least that our work will allow you to ask the right questions and to decide if you need an expert to help you.
Right.
You might not, but it certainly in some situations that's a good idea.
You're listening to Bequency on Wavefarms WGXC. If you've just tuned in, today's guest is Eric Kiviat, the executive director and co-founder of Hudsonia, a nonprofit institute founded in 1981 for research, education, and technical assistance in the environmental sciences.
The next question is, how could listeners support the work you do?
Well, we have a great website, hudsonia.org, and we certainly would start by referring people to the website to see our magazine, News from Hudsonia, and all of our habitat mapping reports and natural resource inventories are available on the website for free. The website of course, also allows people to ask questions or to ask for assistance if they need it. And, you know, and then it gives them the opportunity to learn how they can help us if they want to. So certainly the website, the magazine, News from Hudsonia, and we have a lot of other resources, many reports that we've done over 40 years, mostly about the Hudson Valley region and nearby areas. And we have, you know, we've produced published books and journal articles and given seminars and, you know, lots of other things that people can take advantage of. And then we're happy to have someone say, gee, you know, we really like your work. How can we help you?
Mm-hmm. Are there opportunities for people to volunteer?
Yes. Limited because we're a small organization. But yes, we do have volunteers and we have student interns and other folks who help us in various ways, and we're happy to receive inquiries about volunteering. Or, you know, from a student who's looking for a project during the summer or at some other time.
I was looking at some of the projects that you listed. Might be interest of the listeners of this show was the coffee plantation and the Cerulean Warblers project. Is that something people can donate?
Yes. Yeah, Hudsonia receives tax-deductible donations.
Okay.
As a nonprofit organization. And people can donate through the website or they can contact us directly. The Cerulean Warbler Project is actually in hiatus right now, but it's something that we're very interested in because we've found over the years that Cerulean Warbler, which is a potentially an endangered species, it's under review by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for listing as an endangered or threatened species. Usually nests in large trees, basically mature forest with large trees near water. But they've been able to nest in the large, fast-growing trees like cottonwoods and silver maples on the shores and islands in the Hudson River, which were built from material dredged out of the shipping channel many years ago. So we call these dredged spoil islands. And it's an unusual habitat for Cerulean Warbler because they're usually associated with a very particular type of forest, low elevation, large trees, and so on. So we think that these dredge spoil forests, some of which now are 100 or almost 100 years old and undisturbed during that time, may be helpful to the Cerulean Warbler population as a substitute for old forests that have been logged or destroyed in some other way. So that's, you know, that's the kind of thing that we're always looking for in our research is, what do these uncommon and rare wildlife and plant species need? You know, where do they live? How do they reproduce and so on? How are they affected by human activities? And are there ways that are practical for conservation of the habitats that they need? In the case of the Cerulean Warbler, that may be a large forest with some large old trees near the water. But, you know, it could be a plant like Golden Club, a very beautiful yellow and white plant that blooms in the spring in the freshwater tidal marshes along the Hudson in a particular type of marsh or mud flat, or it might be an animal like the bog turtle, very small, very endangered turtle species that lives in a certain kind of wetland, a certain kind of spring-fed wetland with certain kinds of plants in it. So that's something that we've really become specialists at, is analyzing the landscape and the habitats that the less common wildlife and plants need in order to thrive. Mm-hmm. And then we can help people who are managing nature reserves or parks or estates, private estates, as well as the folks in agencies that are setting policy about protecting or managing land. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's really where we fit in. We don't, Hudsonia doesn't own land. You know, there are a lot of things that we don't do, but we specialize in developing this kind of information to provide technical support to people who are managing the land, who are conserving nature, who are trying to restore habitats, you know, who are protecting rare species, mm-hmm. or streams or wetlands or forests.
I see. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Sure, yeah.
Yes, this question is a little bit more personal question. Where is your favorite spot in the Hudson Valley to see birds in October?
Yeah, that's a difficult question for me to answer because, you know, I go to a lot of different kinds of areas and enjoy many kinds of birds and bird habitats. But it made me think that where I live in the town of Milan in Dutchess County, northern Dutchess County, just east of here, I walk a lot on the local roads, and there, you know, Milan used to be farmland, but now a lot of it is forest, just like large areas elsewhere in the Hudson Valley. And now those extensive mature forests support birds like barred owl and red-shouldered hawk that I never saw when I was growing up, you know, like 60 years ago when I started getting interested in birds, not far from here. So that's something that I enjoy, is just anywhere where there's enough forest, enough mature forest or swamp, and I can see or hear birds like that. And if I'm lucky, maybe a hermit thrush or something that's less common.
Those are the birds you enjoy.
There are some of the birds. I enjoy almost any bird I enjoy. I even like watching pigeons.
Oh.
Yeah.
Pigeons can be entertaining.
Oh, they're very interesting. Yeah, there's a farm that I walk near almost every morning, and there's a flock of about 50 rock pigeons, you know, common introduced pigeons that guess eats the seeds from the cattle feed on the farm. And that's true around here in the countryside where you see pigeons. It's usually near a farm or in a city, of course. Mm-hmm. And the pigeons are very interesting. They're beautiful to watch flying. They all fly up, they land on utility wires. And they don't all point in the same direction when they're perching on the wire. So I wonder, what is about it, you know, what is it for an individual pigeon? Why does one face that way and the other faces the other way?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I sure look the next time I see them.
Yeah.
Yeah, pigeons. Pigeons are kind of funny because I used to see them in Tokyo, too.
Uh-huh.
And we would see them in New
the
York
same
City.
Kind of pigeon.
They look the same.
Yeah.
I think it's the
they have
same.
Those two stripes on the mm-hmm. side. Yeah.
Grayish with a little bit of a purple
right.
tint around the neck. And
yeah. Or other colors.
Or other colors.
They vary.
Yeah, a little bit of a shiny uh-huh. tint to their. I
right.
think they're the same thing. So I have like a little love and hate relationship uh-huh. with pigeons
yeah.
because they're kind of annoying, but they're also. Like,
right. They can be troublesome. Mm-hmm. But there are not that many of them here in the countryside.
Yeah, I don't see them too yeah. many. Oh, that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't think we would talk about pigeons, but Bijan deserves some appreciation too.
Yeah, I'm interested in almost anything in nature. You know, some people want to know, am I an ecologist or a naturalist? So what's the difference? Mm-hmm. Ecologists generally focus on certain things, and they collect a lot of quantitative data, a lot of measurements and data that can be used in statistical analyses. And that's great. I do some of that. A naturalist is more someone, could be a professional or an amateur, doesn't matter, who just goes out and looks at things, just asks what's there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, which species of plants and animals, fungi and so on, what are they doing? How many pigeons are in that flock? Why are they here by this farm instead of somewhere else? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and if you collect observations like that over many years, and in my case, I've been doing it for about 55 years, taking notes and photographs and measurements and so on, you build up a lot of data that can be turned into something useful, even though most of the measurements and most of the observations are qualitative or anecdotal. Mm. They create a picture eventually, and especially if one can combine observations that are made by many different people, like on the website eBird, which mm-hmm. you may know. I know Larry uses it a lot. So there are observations by thousands of birders, maybe many thousands all around the world. And as that site, that platform becomes more sophisticated, we'll be able to extract and analyze data. And some bird researchers are already doing that mm-hmm. because it tells you what, you know, which species of birds are here, when are they here, what are they doing. And that's natural history, but it's so much natural history that it has applications that, you know, that one person can't get in a year or two. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, it's great that we're able to do that now.
Well, thank you for taking time to do this interview with me today.
Yes, you're welcome, Mayuko. I enjoyed talking with you.
Barred Owl.
That was a barred owl sound sample from Stokes Field Guide to Birdsong's Eastern Region. Thanks to Eric Kiviat for speaking with me for Frequency. If you're interested in learning more about Eric and the work of Hudsonia, more information is available at hudsonia.org, which spells like Hudson, HUDSONIA.org. I've been trying to ask questions about like people's favorite throughout my show, and it's always, the answer seems to be always like, well, it's difficult to answer. But speaking of favorite spot for birding in the fall, my new favorite spot, like all of a sudden became a favorite spot, is a Walmart parking lot in Hudson. You know, kind of surprising. I mean, maybe not so surprising for experienced birders, but a beginner birder might surprise to see like what you would see in the parking lot, in the, not so much like in the middle of the nature, but I saw 20 killdeers the other day. It wasn't exactly Walmart parking. I was pulling out from Walmart parking and like driving past by the Petco parking lot, and I saw a killdeer like just hanging out on the lawn, and I was like, wait a minute. And then I drove in, pulled into the Petco parking lot, and I counted twice. There were like 20 of them. It was a good surprise, but I talked to the people later. Apparently it's a known place, a go-to place among the hardcore local bird people. So if you want to see some interesting birds, you don't have to go, you know, out of your way. If you're going to Walmart shopping, just like, just pay attention a little bit to the Petco, the parking lot. Might even be the Walmart parking lot, but I recommend you check it out. Anyhow, I would like to introduce some of the upcoming bird walks that are happening, because there are some interesting things happening. I mean, as always, through year to year, there's always something interesting happening. But there is a walk next Saturday, 30th, September 30th, at 7 a.m. at Grieg Farm. This is organized by John Burroughs Natural History Society, based in Ulster County. But this walk, this is in Dutchess County, I believe, led by Peter Schoenberger, who I interviewed for Bequency this past, I believe it was February. And another walk that is led by another person I talked to on this radio show, Bequency, Anne Bloomfield of the Hudson Valley Farm Hub, is leading another walk. This one is happening on October 1st at the Hudson Valley Farm Hub. They're doing a sparrow walk at the farm. This, again, is on October 1st at 7 a.m. And this one is in Ulster County, so if you're nearby, you should check them out. These two people's interviews were really left a strong impression on me. Like, it really influenced the way I look at things and listen to things and learn things. It was a very inspiring interview for myself. So I hope you might enjoy it as well. If you're interested in hearing those conversations, you can find them at bequency.tumblr.com. That is Bequency, this show's title, Beak and Frequency, Bequency, BEAKUEMCY.tumblr.com. And we have some walks happening in the Columbia County too, organized by Alan DeVoe Bird Club, which is this coming month, October 7th, Saturday in Claremont, led by Chris Franks, starting at 8 a.m. And another walk that's open to public is happening on October 14th. Again, on this one is also on Saturday, 8 a.m., coordinated by Joni at Seagill Klein Kill. So you can find those information if you're interested in joining. You can do so at allendevoebirdclub.org. allendevoebirdclub.org. And so that's it for the upcoming walk information that I wanted to tell you about. And we're going to hear a track by Dirty Column titled Pigeon, because we talked about pigeon. So I hope you enjoy the music. Thanks for tuning in. This is Bequency on Wavefarms WGXC. Okay, we heard a track titled Pigeon by the Dirty Column from his album Time Was Gigantic. You know, kind-hearted people like Vinnie Riley of the Dirty Column and Eric Kiviat would appreciate pigeons. You know, they would see beauty in them and everything. But whenever I think about pigeons, it reminds me of the time I tried to share my snack with them. This happened like decades ago, back when I was still living in Tokyo. Tried to share them the snack that I was eating, and they were like, just look at them and just like walked away. It was kind of insulting. And then since then I kind of stopped like feeding them and be friendly with them. And when I was living in New York City, they were, you know, everywhere, blocking the way, and they never fly nor run. They just like walk slowly and blocking your way and not moving away. And so, you know, brings all these outrageous memories when I think about pigeons. But I have to admit that there's something beautiful about pigeons, and they do good things also, like cleaning up things. I saw one doing that very job of cleaning at the food court of the Grand Central Station the other day. So be thankful to pigeons. You don't have to like them, but be thankful to pigeons. But anyhow, that was the track we heard. And you can find all the links to Hudsonia, the bird walks I mentioned, the music I play today, and also past episodes of Bequency. They all can be found at, again, bequency.tumblr.com. Bequency.tumblr.com. And so I hope you discover the past interviews too. If I can say so myself, they're pretty good. Anyhow, I would like to close my show today with a piece by Steve Rodden, who was an artist who worked with painting, drawing, sculpture, performance, film, video, writing, and sound, and all sorts of things based in LA. He passed away on September 8th this year, and I want to pay a little tribute to his beautiful work. I'm going to play a track titled First Bird Form, which was a piece that's included in the group show at the UCLA Hummer Museum in Los Angeles. Happened in 2001. In his interview, in Steve's interview with Oxford University Press, he says about this piece, in his words, Bird Forms was an early site-specific sound installation. It was created for a courtyard with trees at the center of the Hummer Museum in Los Angeles. I was interested in the fact that these trees were usually filled with birds and bird songs. I have always felt that if sound is going to play in a public space, the artist must be conscious of the existent sonic landscape. So I'm interested in creating works that integrate rather than segregate. I used several recordings of birds on 78 RPM records from the 1930s as a kind of shadow or memory of those anonymous singers who passed away long ago, in attempt to allow them to sing again in the trees. I manipulated many of the recordings via guitar pedals and other analog devices so that the sound seemed to be birds, but not quite. So that's what we're gonna hear to close my show today, but I don't think I'm gonna have time to come back, so I will say goodbye. Now, you're listening to Waveforms WGXC. This program has been Bequency, and I have been Mayuko. This program is on every 4 Saturdays, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. So next episode will air on Saturday, October 28th. I hope you come back and join me again. Coming up next here on WGXC is The Countdown, produced by Tom Rowe, counting down 10 new sound stories or songs, American Top 40 style. Usually the top 10 is recent songs, but sometimes there are thematic countdowns or local music theme shows. So do not touch that dial. And thanks for listening to WGXC and my show Bequency. I hope you have a beautiful weekend and have a great birding.
Thank you.